What's up, everyone? Hey, we just got to freshen up on some of the people that support us out here with Just Another Failure podcast. By the way, Heatwave Visual just dropped their new Future Tech sunglasses. They got three colorways, I think, right now. We have kind of the, what would you call that, a rainbow lens?
Yeah, I kind of got a like a pink rainbow
Yeah, and
lens.
they
They
got
got
a
a
gold lens and a
gold one.
black lens, and they got the clear frames, they have the safety frames. Anyways, Heatwave's awesome. They're our buddies out of San Jose, California. And they hook us up. If you head over, use promo code FAIL and get hooked up on the website. Grab yourself some sunglasses, maybe a sick t-shirt or a hoodie.
I got sick gear and sick glasses,
Yeah,
so.
let's support our rad buddies out there. Also, our buddies at Rockwell, they make sick watches. I've been loving my Coliseum Assault watch. I run the Thidrent line. He's running the same thing. The watches are great. You can burn your calories on here. You can check your run. Two different time zones.
Kind of does it all.
It does it all. They're quality watches that we have everything from sportswear to luxury wear. Plus, they do CrossFit gear, they do workout
Everything.
supplements, everything. Head over, use Failure 20 with those guys. Get yourself laced up with some sweet gear. Also, we got to shout out our buddies London Boat Rentals for hooking us up with a spot and letting
Yeah,
us record.
definitely thank you to London Boat Rentals because without them, we wouldn't have this awesome studio that we have. So yeah, big shout out to them.
If you're in the Long Beach area, stop by, grab a Duffy, come down, stop by Ballast Point Boathouse. We're open again. You know?
Life's back,
Let's
baby.
go.
But yeah, we also have a couple other sponsors. Huertos Coffee. These guys are awesome. The guys that run this are just downright cool dudes. The coffee, also amazing. And I mean, what better way to help give back to our first responders? Because every purchase through Muertos Coffee, 5% goes back to first responders. So get yourself some good coffee and go support the people that help you.
It's firefighter owned and operated.
Firefighter owned and operated. Like I said, these guys are awesome. Their coffee is good and it's for a good cause. So use just another failure at checkout at muertoscoffee.com, I believe it is.
It is.
And get yourself some good coffee and give back to the community. And then also, we have our buddies at Canadips. This is a chewing tobacco alternative to get you off of chewing tobacco because that stuff's nasty. They come in all sorts of different flavors. They are CBD pouches that you just pop right in the lip. They call them pack in the lip boomer. And
No THC.
you just let them chill on the lip. Get all the benefits of CBD. They also do have a THC infused pouch if you are looking for that side of things. That they should be dropping soon, I think.
Yeah, I think in June.
And yeah, these guys are absolutely awesome too. So if you're looking for pack yourself a lip boomer yourself, go to Canadips and use FAIL20 at checkout, get 20% off. And I would suggest just running it down the board. Go buy all the flavors because they're all amazing.
You're not going to be disappointed.
Absolutely not. They're awesome. So yeah, go support everybody. Rockwell Watches, Heatwave Visual, Muertos Coffee, and Canadips. And you guys can also support us.
JustAnotherFailure.com.
JustAnotherFailure.com. You can buy some shirts if you'd like. You can also support us on Anchor for as little as $1 a month.
But overall, enjoy our episode. Thanks, guys.
Enjoy. We'll see you guys later. What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Just Another Failure podcast with myself, Devin, my co-host, Matt, over there. And with us today, we are stoked on this one because we've been trying to get you for quite some time. You're a tough man to get a hold of, but
not too tough, but lately I've been a little bit on the
you got a
front
lot
burner.
going, yeah.
It's been psycho.
But we have Mr. Jay Brewer from the, I mean, how do I even
The
present this
reptile
place? This
zoo.
is this
Well,
is world
prehistoric pets.
famous reptile zoo, prehistoric pets. This is a pretty hot place to be right now.
Yeah, things have been really crazy with social. I mean, we're like got stupid numbers happening and a lot of viral videos from what we do every day. So it's kind of, I've been doing a little bit of traveling on top of it, but basically it's J Prehistoric Pets is my handle.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody, I'm sure you guys have seen plenty of your footage. You've been on World Star. You've been TikTok, on. Yeah, you're Instagram, all over the place. Yeah.
ESPN, CNN. It's
can, been crazy can we, lately. Can we say that you're going to be on the show that you said earlier? Or are we
yeah, they're going to use a video.
Okay, well, and
so
Ridiculousness is also going to be using a video. Yeah, so.
No way.
Yeah, kind of
kind of fun.
Kind of a big deal. That's what I'm saying.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And I saw Rob kind of started up his a new thing recently. He's got a podcast I think going on now with like entrepreneurs and business and stuff like that, so that's pretty rad. But Ridiculousness, that's cool. Now, I mean, Prehistoric Pets has really taken off. Like, would you say really during the COVID time your videos started really getting bigger?
Well, right, to be honest, we've had periods where we hit like rock things out, but on the back end that doesn't always convert to money. Mm. And survival. And of course during COVID I hired a guy, his name's Armin. And I just told him, I go, hey, you know, this is what you want to do. We can do this. And so I basically had already kind of lined up a lot of things to start to focus harder and harder and harder on social. And basically it came through 110% about halfway through COVID.
Dude, it's so awesome. Just started
snowballing. So there was one thing that actually came out of COVID that was positive.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is I went into COVID like wondering how I was going to survive. And you know, I didn't have a ton of money saved up, and because it's always this kind of business doesn't really lend itself to making money. Most people think I'm in it for the money, and it's kind of a joke because it's really I'm in it because I love it.
It's a labor of love for
sure. I mean, you were
and a lot of labor involved. Yeah.
You were here when we hit the crisis the one time.
You and
Lance were busting their butts. We're working day and night, you know, and just to keep like everything up to what we needed for the city and their state requirements and. So anyway, to say it short, the first week of COVID, I spent every dollar I had in my savings in 1 week.
Jeez.
Because I have about 150 grand a month in overhead,
Wow. You
know, because you got to feed all the animals. And to go from, you know, just making it to zero, you know, and you can't let anybody anywhere. And
yeah, you were only allowed to sell food. That was it.
Yeah, and that was even questionable in the very beginning.
Yeah,
because
right.
People weren't even allowed to leave their houses at a point. Yeah. You know, people in L.A. weren't even supposed to come here. And so the zoo was closed. All the animals had to be taken care of. All the bills keep coming in. My rent's huge. The landlord was really considerate and has helped me get through it somewhat. But by the end of COVID, I'm doing pretty dang good. I mean, it's like, wow, I can see the end of this tunnel and it's not a train. You know what I mean? So the social did that, but the social was weird too because we literally took a dive in our financial money on social because nobody was advertising. Most people don't talk about this, but in the beginning of COVID, it was like, oh, we don't know what's going to happen. So why advertise? I mean, are you going to advertise for your TV movie that's coming out that ain't going to come out?
Yeah.
Are you going to advertise for your bar to the bar that ain't even open, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, so I mean, it got things really weird. So all of a sudden it was like that started diving and there wasn't that much money, but it was enough where it was like, oh man, this is getting scary.
It was,
and then all of
a
sudden
a
it started just backfolding and here we are. The numbers are stupid now.
Yeah, now you guys are, I mean, obviously the dive into the social world played out for you guys now. I mean, you're all over the place, so.
You wouldn't believe the number.
I
honestly am just dumbfounded at how many followers we have between all our platforms. Between the Reptile Zoo and then my personal page, we're like.
Oh, you guys are killing it.
Well, I mean, you're also.
You'd never believe the number. Yeah. Take a wild guess.
Like, across all platforms?
Yeah.
3.5 million.
3.5 million. What's your guess?
I'm saying you're going double digits, I think.
30 million.
Oh, my God.
Living the dream.
I was gonna say, anybody
that follows me.
Yeah.
I was going to say 20, too. I was close.
It's so cool, like, just seeing the growth of this place, because I know Devin and his dad have been around Prehistoric and helping you for
years. My parents were here in the very beginning.
No, the real beginning.
Yeah.
Like, Darren used to come over and help me out for fun and to tear things out and fix things when I bought my first location. He goes back so far, I was a commercial fisherman.
Yeah, he talked about
fishing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We had some fishing trips that he was talking about with you guys.
He didn't work with me. He worked with the guy I hired, And they ran the boat together.
Yeah.
And yeah, you'll have to ask your dad what happened to that gas pump.
I've heard that story a couple of times. I've heard some stories about the gas pump. I've heard about camping out just like 100 yards off the Santa Monica or Huntington Beach Pier, you know, coming back late night from fishing, some crazy waters that you guys got in your little boat. Oh, man,
my commercial fishing life was almost as crazy as my reptile life, and that's ripping viral.
Long lines.
Yeah. I mean, I have a kind of weird background because I was actually basically orphaned at 14. Oh, wow. I say basically, I was totally orphaned at 14 with no relatives of any kind alive. And so I had a rocky start. You know, mentally, I didn't think I could do it. I always felt like I got cheated. But you know what? I found out later it was almost a blessing in disguise because I had to do something.
Yeah, you gave that work ethic.
I didn't get a lay and listen to my mom yell at me what I should be doing, or my dad, instead of just real life yelling at me.
And that's, you know, sometimes like kind of the most like honorable way, you know, when you build a business and you created it from something like a really, really young age. I have a couple buddies. I even have buddies in aviation that were pretty much on their own from 15 years old and run full aviation management companies now. They were running aviation management companies when they were 17, 18 years old, finally bought airplane. I remember I was talking to a guy one time. He's like, yeah, I bought my first jet when I was like 25 years old. I was like, wow, I'm 35, 34 years old. I still haven't bought mine yet.
Yeah. Almost there, though. Yeah.
It's crazy the stories you hear from people. But like, you find a labor of love that you were talking about earlier, and you're like, this is what I love to do, and I don't care what it's going to take. I'm going to make this work no matter what it's going to do.
And you know what? There's a lot of times where I never hated my job, mm-hmm. but I hated to create the finances to keep it alive.
Yeah.
Because a dream takes passion. Oh, boy. There we go.
See, I told you, he's a popular man.
This might be important.
Okay.
Oh.
Armin, I'm in the middle of my interview.
Okay. I told you, he's tough to get a hold of.
He's the man, yeah. and he's probably working with our fun ridiculousness thing right now.
Yeah, you got.
And there's a lot of stuff going on. But at the end of the day, you know, if you have a dream, you can't give up on it. Because if I gave up, there was perfectly logical exit points at least 5 times in my life where it was like...
Way easier to just step out on it.
McDonald's is paying real money.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, back when it paid $8 or $6 an hour.
You know what I mean?
Like, whoa, that'd be a lot of money. I had a period one time where the only reason why I survived a 5-year period was I borrowed from my house that I'd bought, that I worked and paid and went up in value. And I remember... I was scraping the floor behind a counter here, and I picked up a quarter, and I went. And it was about the time things were getting back together after about 6 years or some around 6 years of nightmare, no money. And I held it up, and I said, I think I'm finally making money again. And the funny part was, I swear from that day forward, was like I started making money again.
Dude, that's right.
A quarter was the sign right there.
No, I mean, it sounds funny. It's, you know, one of those crusty quarters that, you know, you have to rub it to even see what year it is.
Yeah.
That's funny.
And I said, well, I actually made something. And at that point, things started getting like where it was normal. And I started paying my bills on time and not wasted money on, you know, $1 jillion on every credit card that's maxed out and trying to figure out a way to pay things. And that was, you know, that was like 2009 or 2010 when that happened.
So yeah. when did you actually start?
So
prehistoric.
We are on our, I believe this September, October will be our 35th year.
Wow.
So it's living the dream is a funny statement because, you know, I think that the struggle
just a little bit.
I think there the struggle go. Was the dream. I mean, the work to get here, I had a great time to get here. And I'm, you know, I say get here. I'm like, as I've arrived somewhere, you know what I mean? But, you know, I mean, you think about it, you know, arriving somewhere is when you don't have to worry too much about money. Yeah. And I'm, you know, I'm getting close to that. And I'm like thinking to myself, I really don't care about the money still. Like it still means nothing to me, but it's amazing when I look back at some of the struggles, the things that I hated so bad, I actually look back at like, that was cool.
Well, you
know what I mean? It was like achievement to have hung on and did it almost more than the achievement of looking at my bank account and going, I'm making money now. It's like the achievement is more now when I look back that it's worth way more for my experience of not giving up.
You endured the storm. And like, I know definitely like there's parts of my life, and that's a lot of where the podcast comes from, is like that whole just another failure. Like, how many points have you like wanted to give up, but you knew like there's something more to this. Like, I know I just can't give up right now because
I literally feel like I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to do.
And that's like the most achieving feeling, because I know there's been points in my life that I'm like, dude, there's no way I'm going to ever look back on this point in my life and be like, yeah, I was okay with it. But like years later, you end up looking back at it and you actually like look at it from a new perspective.
No,
and you're like, man, I'm glad like certain things happened at that way, because this built a lot of character and this built a lot of the story that I am today.
I would never be who I was if I was, you know, I know a lot of wealthy people, and very few wealthy people's kids understand that they don't, they sometimes get upset because they can't, they're always living in a shadow,
yeah.
You know? And the funny part is like, you know, even, you know, we'll bring up a no-no. Trump, for instance, right? He gave him $1 million. Like, $1 million is nothing. No, it sounds true. Like a lot of money, but when you start investing in real business and real responsibility and having real families counting on you, and you, you know, it's like really being born to a rich person is usually just a good opportunity, because you have somebody there to mentor you,
yeah,
and help you, maybe that, you know, that actually is that willing to vest in you a little bit.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, there's that stereotypical look on life, like, you know, I was born with a plastic spoon or a golden spoon.
Right.
It doesn't really matter the color of the spoons, but it's
how you use it.
Yeah, how you use it and how you're mentored through it, right? Like, I've met the rich kid that, like, you're looking at him like, dude, wow, like, you don't even have any care for life, and you're just, like, out there.
That's what I mean.
And then there's
taking drugs, just, yeah. They're ruining their life. They could have anything, but they want their... basically holding on to nothing.
And then I know other very wealthy kids, and they took what they had and they saw what their dad or their grandfather
built. And then they don't get any credit for it. Yeah. And they worked as hard as a guy that started with nothing.
Yeah.
Sometimes it frustrates me to, even though I'm on the side that everybody wants to hear, you know, self-made and all that. I just think, hey, everybody, quit judging everybody. Why don't we, maybe you don't know the struggle. Everybody's got a story and a struggle.
Everybody's been through something.
And that's what this podcast is for.
Everybody's got a story and a struggle.
And that's what we love to touch on this podcast. And I mean, I was going to ask you this question too, because like you said, I've been here and I've seen it firsthand, the failures that we've gone to, you know, just building. You expanded not too long ago, but just the dilemma of dealing with that. But I mean, I'm sure you've had stuff way gnarlier than that. I mean, do you have something that sticks out to you that's like, I can't believe we had to go through this, and luckily we made it out on the other side?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many stories. I can't even tell you. I mean, personally, I'm a person of faith. I believe there's somebody up there in charge of the whole deal.
I'm with you on it 100%.
And anybody that doesn't think so, I just say, it's okay. Pay attention to the details. And in time, you're going to realize those coincidences can't just always land that way. And I've had a lot of points where I was literally on the brink of completely no way financially going to survive. And I mean, I'll just say one little story. One time me and my wife were in a divorce situation. We're married still. And we got remarried, to be honest. Went through the divorce home. Funny is, that's how I met
Greg.
He was in the same boat.
Oh, yeah.
And anyway, I met Greg. But anyway, Greg. And anyway, we're in the middle of this, right? And my wife, basically, we go to a counselor. And the counselor, my wife tells the counselor, hey, he needs to quit. What's that background sound? Something. Oh, it's a pump.
Oh.
We'll wait 1 second. Okay, so the counselor basically, we go to a counselor. And my wife says, he needs to get rid of the business and get out of it. He hasn't made any money in, you know, who knows how long. Wasting time. If God wanted to have the business, then he would be doing better. And the counselor said, whoa, hold on. We're going to say that if we're going to assume that it's not God's plan, we're going to have to look at the Bible. And the Bible's full of tough stories.
God uses the most, you know, unsolved hero to do great missions.
I mean, just impossible things. And it was so funny because Mike, the counselor, told me, okay, look, so he didn't want to get in a fight. You know, he's a really good counselor, and he was more asked questions. And so he looked at me and he goes, Jay, are you willing to close the business down? You know, if you need to, are you willing to close the business down? And I said, huh. I said, as far as I'm concerned, if God wants me out of this business, there ain't no way I'm going to make it. I don't even know how I'm making it right now. And it sounds like great to get out of the business, but I believe in my heart, I'm not supposed to give up. And it could be from my childhood and losing my mom and my dad and having no parents and surviving the impossible and somehow it always working out. But basically I said, yes, I'm willing to do it. And he says, are you willing to tell God every day that, you know, if you want me out, tell me to do it. And I cakewalk. Ugh. And my wife's like,
leave it at the cross every day.
Right. My wife like, literally, was literally like, Jay's never going to quit, you know? And so I knew she was going to say that. So I just said something really clean. I said, you know what? I told the counselor, here's a hardcore fact. On Monday morning, it was like a Wednesday. And so Monday, almost, you know, 5 days later, I said, I have to come up with $32,000, I think it was, above and beyond the $10,000 I got to come up for payroll. And I said, and I don't see any hope of that happening. And if I don't have that money, I'm going to be behind on this thing called a 941 tax. Well, if 941 tax is unforgivable because it's basically all my employees, it's their tax, my tax part for them, all bundled in. It's not my money. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's their money. It's the state's money. It's the it's the federal government's money. And so I basically said, at that point, I'm going to shift gears to crash. I'm just going to, every dollar is going to go to paying the taxes, the legal responsibilities. I'll hire an attorney and BK, basically. So I told my wife, come Monday, if I don't have that money,
I'm done.
I said, I'm going to take that as a
sign from God.
God, if God don't
bail, this is divine.
I can't make that happen. It's just not going to happen.
And it wasn't me testing God, because I was like, dude, I was basically like, God, you got me. If this is where I'm going, you must have big plans, because I thought these were giant plans, and I want your plans. And this is no lie. Monday morning came. I walked up to my wife, and I told her, hey, honey, today's the big day. And we were sleeping in two different beds at this point. And she looks up at me and goes, she looks up like, yeah, okay, sure. You know what I mean? Like, okay. And I came into work early and I walked through the zoo. It wasn't the zoo yet. It was just on the almost done part of the zoo. And we were trying to transition. And I walked in and I just literally said, wow, God, I guess I didn't know what you wanted for me. You know what I mean? But I'm good. Yeah. I'm good. Just like the counselor told me. I'm good. Let's do it. You might, you know, whatever plan you have, I don't care if it's shoveling dishes. I don't care what it is. I misread what your plan was for me. You know what I mean? And I walked in the office and I had this phone sitting there on the counter. And it was an old phone that my manager that had worked for me 6 months prior had a phone number to. It was, you know, it was for my manager, not for me, to catch all the, you know, the overall calls of what a manager would do to solve problems. And I reach over, I pick up this, and it's plugged in. I don't know who plugged it in. I mean, nobody had used it for at least 3 months. And it was laying on the counter, it starts ringing, and I kid around, it's a bat phone, you know, because the bat phone, you know, like it's, you know, I mean, it's like, that's the connection, you know?
Yeah, that's the and lifeline.
I pick up the phone, and this guy starts basically complaining. He's like, you know, I came down there yesterday. I took Sundays off. And at that point, I really took Sundays off because I knew I couldn't do anything on my own. But, you know, it was like the first time in my life that I realized that it wasn't my hard work. It wasn't me doing everything. Everything I tried failed. I mean, it was just like anything I touched was guaranteed to fail. And I'm like always been called the golden boy. Everything I touch, you know, fall down and you shit and it smells like roses. You know what I mean? Everybody always tells me I'm the luckiest guy in the world. And I do. I really am. And so anyway, at this point, I realized I had come to the point that nothing was, it was all illusion. God had my back the whole time. And he was just going, this poor guy has no clue. And so this guy's complaining to me, right? And I just, you know, I'm like, yeah, and he just, I wanted to buy this lizard, and, you know, they wouldn't sell it to me. I go, well, to be honest, that lizard was not for sale. It was my lizard. I go, but if you really want that lizard, I'll sell him to you, but he's not going to be the price of the other one, but close. The guy goes, I don't really care about it. Forget it. And then he says to me, but I got a question for you. You're going to like this. I had this package online for $32,000. Now, it's not just any package online. It's called the Holy Grail. I mean, this is a dang straight story, right? And I'm going, and he goes, I was kind of curious about that Holy Grail package. And I just immediately flush. You know, like, he was in the store yesterday. I look at the phone, 949. I'm like,
this dude's local.
Damn, you know? I mean, there's too many things weird about this. And I go, I tell the guy, hey, why don't you come down? He goes, oh, no, I'm not interested in it. And I go, well, you know, if you want to look at it, I go, everything's going to crap. I don't have any, you know. I said, they're making all these laws to outlaw what I love. And I go, at the end of the day, I do it because I love it. I'd be more than happy to show them to you just for fun. And he goes, okay, I guess I'll come down. Well,
that was your saving grace. That was the
he
guy.
He walks in by 12:30. He hands me a gold American Express. And he goes and looks at the snakes and he goes, yeah, I want them. And he goes, but I want one of your holdbacks. I'm like, well, I guess I could probably switch that. You know,
like, fair enough. And I mean, if you're going to go with the Holy Grail package here, we'll, you know, we can make some exceptions.
Then he says to me, I want that one too. And so by the time it was all done and I gave him a discount, he gave me like 34.5. I don't know the exact number. I can't quite remember, but I remember it being around $35,000, right?
No way.
And I call my wife, you know, at like 12:30 and go, well, you can pay that tax.
You're like, we're back in it, baby.
And I'm just sitting there in awe. Yeah. And it's, and you know, and if that happened once, people, I would probably would say, oh, lucky shot. I can't count how many. I could tell you stories until you're blue about, I'm serious. I can tell stories like that. At least five of them were, we were at a pivoting point where I was going to lose my business. And, you know, all of a sudden this problem turns into my profit. I mean, and so, you know.
And were those situations one person, like multiple times too, like has been, or has it just worked into stuff?
It's mostly been like this big deal or that big deal or this bunch.
You're just like waiting until the very last minute to make it happen.
I'm telling you, one thing I do know.
It's past the last minute.
God has a sense of humor.
Yeah.
And I could tell story after story. So here's the funny part. So he paid me like $3,500 over what I needed, right? And I thought, dang, we went over and above. My wife calls me, we need $35,000, $34,500. And I'm like, that's how much I deposited. Like literally, there was
the exact amount that you needed.
It was like
you paid that debt.
Dollars close, you know? And so, how many coincidences until you have to look in the mirror and go, okay, there's something going on there. You know
what I mean?
There's
a bigger picture.
There's a bigger picture. So, you know, that's helped me learn. Like when we went through the thing with Devin, when, you know, the city was like, ah, you know, you guys haven't pulled permits for half the
stuff.
It
was like something new every day.
Oh, no. I'm very confident their job was to make it look impossible. And I could have never past those bridges, except that I knew it wasn't my fight. And I'm not kidding you. Every time I hit an impossible, my daughter was like the most incredible girl in the world, right? And she's just like, if you die, I'm going to sue them for everything they ever had. Because I was like working, you know, 20-hour days and just stupid things to get it all done. And it was like, it was obviously a little biased. And the coolest part was everything, every time something hit that was impossible, that was an absolute have to get through, and there was no way to get through it, like the next day.
Brought you to the fire.
Right. It would be like that wasn't important no more. The things that we started that were going to be the things that were impossible, and I just kept telling her, you know, I don't know how, but I know I don't think he's changed his mind. This is what I'm supposed to do. And I'm going to believe that. And we just got through the, and by the time we were done, the people that were my, I consider, you know, to be nice, unfond of me, all came around to think, you know what? You did what we asked, and you did it reasonable, and you care about what you're doing. And after it was all done, they were all my friends. They gave me an award for completion, and we're open today, and it's like things are booming, and you know, and it's just the amount of trials is just incredible. And I, as hard as it was, I look back, and you know, you look back at a race and that you almost die to win, it's a great thing, right?
Yeah.
But it was a struggle to get there.
Yeah.
To pay, it's like playing basketball. You know, people, oh, they just make all this money throwing a ball. Yeah, right. They work their butts off to throw that ball, and they're gifted to do it. And so when they win, so in a way, the struggle, without the struggle,
it's meaningless.
There's
really no
reward.
You don't get a real win unless you go through the struggle.
Yeah, I love it.
If the money if just whatever you're going after is just laying on a table and you just pick it up and you stick it in your pocket, it has no value.
Well, I mean, not to say that, you know, if we hit the lottery right now.
But I mean, that's absolutely true at the end of the day. Like, if things are just always given to you without work, like, you would have zero appreciation for everything. And I think, you know, from my standpoint, you know, faith in what I do with my life, like, I can't help but, like, look at time and time and time again where God just shows up. And like you said, he does have a sense of humor.
Oh, man.
And there's been times in my aviation career where I'm just like, I'm so beat, I'm so done, I'm like, I'm done, and then something pops up, and you literally just laugh. And you're like, really? Like, this is how it's working out right now? Like, you just can't help but laugh at it.
You got to pinch yourself in a while.
At the end of the day, from a faith perspective background, if God just told all of us that we were going to love him all the time and that there was no such thing as free will, and, like, what would be the point of life at the end of the day? What would be the point of not having trials? Like, why would we just go through things and just... Like, there has to
be. If there's no bad, how would you know what good was?
Exactly.
If there's no, you just wouldn't know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you know, wouldn't know when good is good and when's bad is bad, and you would, so there has to be some, you know, it's funny, you know, we look at our like Apple phone and it's got a picture of an apple with a bite out of it, you know, which isn't by accident because it's knowledge. And,
yeah.
And the tree was called the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And the funny part is, because of that, we find out what good and evil is. And people be like, oh, there's no such thing as good and evil. But then when they look at the news for 5 minutes, there's no question what good and evil is.
Well, it's right or wrong at the end of the day. If you can't concept good or evil, like, you have to believe that certain things are wrong and certain things are right.
Well, there has to be some kind of, otherwise they're just chaos. Otherwise, I just go to your house and take your house tomorrow.
Yeah, check your balances, right? Yeah.
Who he who has the biggest gun? Yeah. The biggest black arms, but you don't have to.
Yeah.
But anyway, the whole thing is just that I've learned in life that when struggles come, just embrace it.
Exactly, and that's, like, the best way to get through it. And like I was saying initially, like, I learned about prehistoric pets from... Couple years back, I came here with Devin and Darren, and your daughter had showed us around and did a bunch of cool behind the scenes.
Yeah, I got three daughters. Two of them worked a lot of time here.
Yeah.
And have been a big, intricate part of the
whole... That was back when Laura was here.
Yeah, she took us behind the scenes and, like, showed us snakes I never even knew existed. I was like, dude, this is so cool. And then I remember watching during COVID, and I was seeing you with all these influencers, like, wow, like, this is rad how big, like, he has blown up, and, like, it's how much interest that he's getting out there. It's absolutely amazing. Like, it's so cool. And now... Have you gotten to the point? I know Hucker used to work here.
And I just talked to Mike yesterday.
Yeah,
Hucker was on not too long ago, too.
Mike Hucker, which is a living the dream guy, dude, you know, he used to come in here with his BMX bike and donate his time because he loved reptiles and BMX.
And he told us about that. It was cool because you used to let him take snakes on shows, like Habit. Oh,
yeah, that's after. Yeah. So after he got famous, he would come in and go, I got to tell everybody the only job I had in my life, you know. And literally, he only donated his time. And then one day his bike got stolen. Came in, said, man, I need a bike. Can I work for you for a little while? And I go, absolutely. You just have to not kill yourself. Because he'd come in, like, knocked out every four weeks. He'd be like, oh, I was knocked out for 10 minutes. You know what I mean?
Well, he got the name Hucker for a reason.
Right. And at the end of the day, it's still the same thing. He went through a struggle to become successful. Yeah. I have a friend of mine. His name's Walter Jones. He is he's in the top 100 football players of all times, and he's a Hall of Famer. which is, I mean, Hall of Fame is huge. Being a top 100 is...
Yeah, that's like decent, I'd say.
That's like it's double down, mediocre, right?
It's all right, I guess.
It's a double down. He's above a all-star, above top of the list, okay? And he has a brand, and his brand's called Best to Ever Do It. And he would tell you a story, basically, of the same thing. He came from worse than nothing, and a coach just walked up and he said... He tells the story. The coach walked up and says, "You're a $1 million,
dime a dozen."
Basically saying you have the ability; it's your choice. Yeah. And he came to the conclusion that his brand is best to ever do it. BW, whatever it is, in 72, because it's best to ever do it. And to be honest, it's really that simple in life. If you're chasing something just for money, I don't think you're going to be super successful. Even if you capture all the money, you're going to end up there empty. Yeah. And if you do something you believe in and you really want to be the best to ever do it, I just think the reward will come. Oh, I really do.
If you put your time, your effort, your faith, everything into it, like
I started as a commercial fisherman.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I loved it and I was not just an average commercial fisherman. When I was 15, I literally had guys that fish in 30 years following me to my spots. I mean, how do you explain that?
Yeah.
I mean, I have my theory of that, and I look back at it, and it's real simple. The Bible says he's the father of the fatherless. End of story. Yeah. I had my back so many times that it just blows my mind.
It's so rad. Like, that story.
It's not that I'm so good at anything. It's just that I truly give it my all. I truly want to do the right thing. And at the end of the day, it just manages to work out.
I love it. Now, going from that side into the reptile side, because I've watched your post. You have throwbacks. Like, you've been into reptiles like your entire life. You've traveled the world with some amazing experiences with exotic animals.
It's insane.
But have you had, like, any near-death incidents with an animal?
So, basically... 36 years ago, I was out snake hunting with a friend, and I lifted up a big piece of metal, and 5 rattlesnakes were there.
Five.
And the metal had these ribs in it. And I'm just like, you could say I'm simple, harmless. I'm like, because I had a chip on my shoulder from my not having a family and everything horrible, I was like a nightmare. But deep down inside of me, I always wanted not to steal, cheat, rob, or take... I had to be right.
You had your morals.
And if I was right, I would just as soon kill you as look at you. I mean, it's weird, but, you know... Yeah. I mean, it just backed in. It just... Well, I was a real primitive person. And I mean, we grow as... You know, we'd like to hope we keep growing through life. And I'd like to think I'm smarter than I was back then. But anyway, I lifted up this piece of metal and all these... And I had a friend with me, and we barely could pick it up. Had these ribs, and if I dropped it, it was going to kill all these snakes. And I'm thinking, why do I want to kill all these snakes? They didn't do nothing to me. I like snakes, you know what I mean? And 4 of them take off all the right directions, and 1 of them comes straight at me. And it's at that teetering point, right? And my friend's gone. You know what I mean? Like, you decide what you want to do. I decided a second that I was not committed to saving you. It's you're on your own. And it was at that teetering point, right? And I couldn't flip it over, and I knew the other rattlesnakes were there. And I thought if I dropped it, it was just going to cut the last one up. And so I waited long enough, but too long, and the snake coiled up to strike at me, right? And by this point, I'm like, I push it over, it falls over backwards, the snakes are all gone. I put my foot up, it strikes at my foot and hits the foot, hits the tennis shoe. And I had a pair of Vans back before Vans were anybody.
Yeah, Vans.
Shout out Vans.
$6 a pair, baby.
Shout out Steve Van Orden.
$6 a pair I paid for my Vans because I'd go to Santa Ana and buy them at their seconds.
Yeah.
And you couldn't even see why they're seconds. And they were just seconds because they were checkered and nobody would buy checkered Vans. But I did.
Yeah.
I had all the cool Vans. If I would have just boxed my Vans with the date they were made, I'd have been rich today and I wouldn't have to work for a living. But anyway, so I had these Vans, and of course they're low on the side, the slip-ons. And the snake struck again, and I pinned it down, and rattlesnakes have rubber faces. And the one fang, one of the two fangs just stuck right in the side of my foot and just pumped that sucker at me, right? And I was just completely ignorant. I call it young and dumb, guys. Sorry for all you 18-year-olds out there. I'm not trying to pick on you, but I was 18 too. Thought I knew everything, but I didn't. You'll figure that out later too. Right. So anyway, I thought, oh, I watched Old Yeller. Old Yeller just crawled, went home, and sat by the fireplace, and he was fine. And so,
you didn't do anything.
You just let that thing chill.
So I tell my friend, hey, I think I better go home just in case I get sick. And so we get in the car and we start driving down the road. Before I get in the car, I pull my foot up to my face, which tells you that I'm a little bit different shape than I am now. And I start sucking out the venom, spitting it out, you know, and it's bleeding like crazy, and I'm spitting. And I get done, and I get in the car, and my lips start tingling. And I look at him, and I go, ah, shit, I shouldn't have put that stuff in my mouth.
Dude, what?
But here's the reality. It is completely false. The venom was going through my entire body.
Yeah, and coming up to your head.
And it was just my lips were tingling because all my body was getting ready to shut down and say, Nice knowing you, Mr.
We're
Brewer.
Out. Yeah, we're done.
You, peace out.
Have a good night. We're done.
And here comes another story. So basically, I get the car. We start driving, and I go, hey, maybe we better drive a direction that takes us by a hospital to my house.
Just in case I feel a little, if I'm not feeling good, we can stop by, but if we're good,
we'll just keep driving.
And as I'm seriously thinking I'm going to go home still. And it feels like I'm hanging on to 220 electricity for all you electricians out there. Just
zaps.
I could feel the wave of power going through me, but there was no electricity. But so then we get about another 5 minutes, and I go, we better go to the hospital. And then we go about two more minutes, and I see this construction site in the middle of nowhere. And I just go, pull over and call 911. I didn't have a cell phone. This was 35 years ago. I don't know how I didn't have a cell phone. I may have just left it at home because I had one back then. And the guy pulled over, called 911. Paramedics show up. I'm like, can't move my arms. I feel like somebody's created a mold of my body, the size of my body. And then said, oh, let's take it down 30% and then put him in it. And let's see what he thinks about a semi truck parking on it. So my whole body was...
You had nothing. You were just...
Crushed. It felt like rigor mortis, but like hot, like if you were electrocuted, like you were a stun gunner, you know, like.
Yeah, you got shot tased, with like a tased.
Yeah, just super locked up. Like all my muscles were locked up, and I tried to move my arm and it wouldn't move. And this one silly fireman kept telling me that I wasn't bit by a venomous snake. And all I think I'm doing is like barely breathing, staying real calm. Because the only thing I did know was that if you stay calm, you're supposed to be fine, you know? And this guy's telling me, we're hyperventilating. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to strangle you in a minute.
I can't move my arm.
Yeah, my arms don't work, but I'm going to beat the hell out of you.
Oh, no, I'm telling you, my word in front of God, my hands would have been around his throat the third time he told me that I wasn't bit by a rattlesnake. You know, my friend's sitting there going, he's got 55 snakes at home, bro. You know, he's not telling him, bro, because bro wasn't even a word back then. Yeah. But he's like telling this guy, you know, hey, he's got 50 snakes at home.
We know
what rattlesnakes are. They're rattlesnakes. We were out snake hunting, you know. And the guy's just like, no, one hole. It's not a rattlesnake.
One hole.
And so the paramedics take me away. I get in the paramedics thing, and I'm like, I'm literally got this incredible ability for pain. So much so I almost died from appendicitis once. I'm capable of just, like, people watch my videos and see a snake bite me, and they wonder why I'm not scared. It's because it's like, I can do this. You know what I mean? Punch me in the nose.
Yeah, you got something going on up there that's not right, man.
I never said I was born normal. I just said I was born me. So anyway, so basically they get me in the paramedics thing, you know, and I'm laying there, and I literally almost fell out of the car because they were arguing about whether I was bit by a rattlesnake, and I couldn't hold myself up, and I was falling, and I'm like, and the guy, and the stupid guy's like, you're going to have to settle down. I'm like, I'm falling. Your friend was smarter than the paramedic. It wasn't a paramedic, it was a fire chief.
He's like slowly rolling off.
No,
like,
I was going to.
Here I go.
I was going to do a face plant from a full size pickup head first. I mean, No lie. And so they get me inside this ambulance, right?
Yeah.
And I tell them, I go, hey, I'm going to just like close my eyes and I'm going to try to like pretend I'm, you know, phase this whole thing out and sleep. And the guy goes, hold on a second. He's hooking up all the heart monitors. And the heart monitor, he looks over at the heart monitor and he goes, no, don't do anything.
Do not go to sleep. You're not going to wake up.
Like he like crapped his pants. I mean, I was like, hey, somebody that actually believes. You
someone's
know?
Paying attention.
Somebody that actually is not, I mean, I hate to call anybody not the most intelligent person in the world, but that guy, poor guy, I mean, he needed some help to listen to what the person's saying.
Like, I was trying to tell you this. And I was trying to tell you.
Which it wasn't him. This was a new set of guys, and they're rushing me to the hospital. I get to the hospital. They open the door, and the emergency ward guy says, oh, my God. If I remember right, it seemed like he said stage 5. And I didn't know what stage 5 meant. Later, I found out stage 6 is cardiac arrest.
Wow. Oh, so you're right on that.
So I was knocking on bye-bye. And I knew I was. I mean, there was no doubt in my mind. And so they roll me in there, and I hear them yelling, you know, flying all basically it's called, back then it was horse serum, and it's rattlesnake antivenom. And I hear them tell them, we need more antivenom. We get grabbing 10 vials anywhere you can. And, you know, they're ranging it, and they roll me in. And the guy tells me, I'll tell you right now, if you can stay calm like you are, tell me everything that's going on, we're going to get a long ways quick. And I'm like, I'm good. Just all I ask is you tell me the same thing.
Yeah.
And so we get there. They give – and they basically – here's the crazy part. This whole thing was on like 5 times slow down. I knew everything that was going on in the room. I mean,
your fight or flight just kicked in, like just slowed everything down.
No, I can't even
down.
Tell you. It was like I've been in car accidents where the car tumbles and you can remember the whole every turn and, you know, pieces flying in front of you. Well, I could remember every second of a 1.5 hour period as if it was like logged in my memory, like one piece at a time.
You were taking notes mentally, basically.
No, like I was literally like they were reading it. I can hear them reading this thing like. This little label that comes with the antivenom, and it said that it takes 10 minutes to know. They stick a little drop underneath your skin, 10 minutes. If it's not showing some crazy effect, slam them with the, you know. And I'm, you know, it was really complicated to mix it. And so they're mixing one up, and they put a little thing underneath my skin, and I'm like, okay, it's time. You know, I mean, I'm beating them by 30.
You're watching the clock.
I'm 30,
like...
No, like by the second.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm like literally like, okay, it's time. And it wasn't like, and it was like to the second, you know? And so they give me this vial, and I'm like, ooh, oh, I'm going to walk away right now. Like, I'm
I feel
like,
great.
No, like, it took me back 30 minutes, like, one vial, right? And then the doctor goes, okay, everything's going good. Tells the lady, bag up 10 vials and put them on a drip, right? And this stuff is at least 10 minutes a vial to mix. I mean, it's stupid amount of time. Five minutes of vial minimum.
Yeah.
So she starts mixing it, and I'm thinking nothing. I'm thinking, wow, I'm going to walk out here today. You know?
Just give me 2. I'm good to go home.
Yeah, no, I mean, literally, like, the first vial made me 80% recovered. And about 5 or 10 minutes into it, I'm like, oh, my God, here I go again. I'm slipping, like, twice the speed and back to where I was. So I tell the nurse, hey, I need one of those vials. Oh, I'll be done in a minute. I go, no, I need one of those vials. No. She says, just relax. I got this, you know? And I'm like, no, I'm like, I need this vial. And so I basically give up arguing with this lady, and I'm just trying to zone out. I'm back to that zone out to survive. And the doctor walks in, and I go, he goes, what's wrong? And I'm worse than I was, and I need a vial, and she won't give me one, basically, you know? I'm like a crackhead, you know what I mean?
I need it.
Scratching his neck.
I can't move again. Yeah. I'm back to full paralyzed. The doctor looks at him and goes, well, get it. And she's like telling him, I'll be done in a minute. And he's like, well, get it started. You know, I don't care, get it started. And they start giving me the stuff. I come to the peak of almost death. The minute that stuff hit my vein, It was like I was 10 times worse. Oh, it was like, okay, you warned us that we had a fight, and then we built an army, and you're going to come in here with one little vibe, you know, one little, you know what I mean? Like a little drip.
God, yeah.
And I mean, my heart started racing. I started throwing up. I couldn't breathe. You know, I had an oxygen blood sensor on my, in my wrist or in my arm. And it was just a little Band-Aid around my arm, you know? And I started yelling, you got to get, you know, the doctor's like, man, I told you, you got to stay calm. I told you that if I couldn't breathe, I can't stay calm. And I could not breathe for nothing. And they were like, you know, getting ready to tie me down. And I go, get the blanket off. They got the blanket off. And I go, you got to get the tourniquet off. I thought I was going to die. And the only thing I was scared of was they're going to bring me back to it. And that's the truth. Yeah. And so basically, I spent 7 days in intensive care. All the papers said I was going to die. I was in an intensive care heart unit because apparently it's the venom in a rattlesnake is either hemotoxin or neurotoxin. And this was a neurotoxin. So the neurotoxin just destroys your nerves and it just, you self-destruct from the inside out. And so basically seven days later, I was able to get out and my leg looked like a truck had ran me over.
Oh my God.
I mean, it was just red purple. And huge. No, it was literally black, purple, and
all the way down, like hip to your foot. Just,
and like 4 days into it, 3 days into it, I told the doctor, I said, tell me what's going to happen. And he goes, oh, we'll discuss it when we get there. And I go, no. You told me that you were going to tell me, and I needed to, you know. So
you made a promise.
We're on the honor system here, buddy.
Exactly. I'm like, you told me that you were going to key off and vice versa. And I go, I want to know. And he goes, well, you're going to lose some skin. And I go, okay, what's the definition of that? Well, you might lose your foot. We think you're going to lose your foot. And I go, okay, what does that look like? And he goes, well, I don't want to talk about it. I go, no, I want to know.
We're on the honor system, buddy.
You cut my dang foot off. If you're going to cut my foot off, I want to know that you're going to cut it off. I want to know what's the next procedure. He goes, well, to be honest, we let it rot off. And he goes, yeah. So they basically, necrosis, where everything that it kills, all the blood that can still work will basically form a wall of protection, right? And this, if it's not infected, which they basically scrape it off as it rots to keep it from overpowering the foot.
It's like some leprosy stuff going on right now.
No, this is gnarly, right? So he's basically telling me, hey, your foot's going to rot off. We think you're going to lose at least part of your foot, minimum, or your whole foot. And so I said, okay. I'm like, well, I mean, I just wanted to know. I mean, it sounded dumb, but I was just like, I needed to know. And the funny part is, my buddies from church showed up.
Right over you?
Not 1 inch of skin fell off. Not one inch of skin.
What in the...
Back to that, if you want to believe luck, whatever. You know what I mean? Not, that doctor was convinced I was losing a part of my foot.
How old were you at the
time? I was 22 or 23. I can't quite remember.
Yeah.
Because I was going to... I was dating my... Pretty sure I was 22. Because I got married at 23. So I was 22 years old, and of course, then at day five, I was like, I got to get out of here, because I was like, I have no mom, no dad, no insurance. They told me that the bill was up to 130 grand, and I'm like...
You're like, I don't want to be here anymore. I'm not paying you guys anymore.
I'm like, you know what? What are you doing? I'm just laying here now. I'm out of here, and the little canny striper told me, no. Let me help you out, and she went and got some Social Security person, and they were like, you're not leaving. And I'm like, I'm signing myself out of here.
I'm checking out.
You're like, watch this foot that's not even rotten off and walk right on out of here. What do you mean? I'm gone.
I'm getting a wheelchair and you're getting me out of here. Yeah. And they basically figured out this thing called SSI and it all got paid for. Wow. And it was just another like impossible thing. And I was just barely qualified, but I qualified because I had nothing. I had a little bit of money in the bank, but it wasn't enough to take me through the type of healing. And so they just considered me having nothing. All paid for, foot was fine, but here's the crazier part. When I get out, they hand me those little pieces of paper that I never read, right?
Rot row.
Couldn't read very well anyway. Well, now they have this new drug that doesn't have this, but it's called horse serum. So there's this thing called serum sickness. And they said, he says, well, I didn't show you this, but you better read it. And I go, oh, what does that mean? Like, okay, because you were on this honor system, right? He hadn't been so honest, right? He goes, well, I figured we didn't have to worry about talking about it until you lived through it, you know?
Yeah.
And he handed me this paper, and he says, and he goes, well, basically, you have 1 in 40,000 chance of being a quadriplegic. You have 1 in, you know, 60,000 to be a paraplegic. You have, like, this list of all you're going to dies, you know what I mean? All these things, you're going to be paralyzed in bed for the rest of your life with these odds. And then it's then I said, well, how am I going to know if I got it or not? He goes, well, it takes something like 22 days. I go, you mean I have to wait for 22 days to find out if I have it? Well, there are symptoms. And I go, what are the symptoms? Itching. Well, my leg.
Hey, he's freaking out every time he's like, oh, this is it. This is
my,
it.
My leg's purple in the size of a drum.
No, it was so big. They measured my leg every 30 minutes for 2 days. Because they're gonna make 7 incisions because they didn't want it to rip. They just didn't want it to turn into like a blown up watermelon.
Oh my God.
Which they don't do anymore. But now they don't, so I was just like, oh crap, you know what I mean? And my leg had already started the itching process because the skin, you can't swell it up.
I'm in phase 1.
Yeah.
Dude, I mean,
I'm a write off. I'm done. Yeah, I'm done. I got itches everywhere. I'm done.
I'm sitting there itching for, you know, the next 2 weeks, and I'm just like, oh my God. You know, I got it. I'm not going to be able to walk, and I'm itching, and, you know, I'm just like, oh God, please help me.
It's in his head, dude. He's just already writing it. He's like, dude, I feel like I can't walk already. Oh, I'm done.
Who could read that and not, you know, I mean, my leg was literally shedding skin, and it was going from black to purple to oranges and, you know, all the fun rainbow colors of bad things like decaying meat.
I got a Skittle factory going on in my leg.
Oh, man.
So I think the moral of the story is maybe don't get bit by a rattlesnake.
If you see a rattlesnake, I always tell everybody, if you see a rattlesnake, respect it.
Yeah.
Now,
and what I mean by that is people want to run out and kill them. Like, oh, God, it's a rattlesnake. Grab a shovel. Guess what? 50% plus people that get bit are screwing with them.
Yeah.
Okay? So rule number one.
You're getting within range.
Leave them alone. You know what I mean? If you see a rattlesnake, they don't want nothing to do with you. They're going to sit there and pretend they're dead because they don't want nothing to do with you. If they see you from far enough away, they're going to be gone so quick you'll never see them or you'll barely see them. So I've learned that the best thing to do with a rattlesnake is you see it, you gently walk away. And the reason why you carefully walk away isn't because that rattlesnake's going to chase you down. It's because if there's one rattlesnake, there could be 2 rattlesnakes. And if you're running all stressed out of your mind, you're going to make a mistake. And that's the way life is. If you run around scared of your own shadow, everything you fear is going to eventually, you're going to, you drive a car scared, you know, it's just like a cop, okay? A police officer pulls up behind you. You start getting nervous.
You're not doing anything wrong, but you're nervous.
Before you know it, you get nervous enough that you're swerving and the cop pulls you over. Why are you swerving? Well, because you're in my rearview mirror, bro.
I was watching you the whole time in the lane.
You know what I mean? So
you're tailgating me.
You know, I talk to sports people all the time, and I'm like, you got to get in. You know, I tell them, you know, I just consider you got to just be comfortable and not scared, because when you're not scared, you're able to do what you're really meant to do. And the sports people are like, yeah, we call it being in the zone. And it's like, you're not worried about it's a Super Bowl. You're not worried about that basket. You're not, you just realize, I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do. And if it works, great. And if it doesn't, I'll be okay.
So now, actually tying into that, I was about to ask you, you deal with a ton of animals. Do you have any animal that still you're like a little worried to handle?
Well, I mean,
obviously, like the poisonous ones, you're going to take extra precaution. So, but do you have
venomous,
like,
but.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
No, I'm good. I like to teach people.
Yeah.
And I used to call them poisonous. And I just think, what an easy way is that when somebody says poisonous, I say venomous.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal. And all it is poison is ingested, venom is injected.
Oh, okay.
So an animal that puts it in your skin is venomous.
It's venomous.
Right.
So you're handling venomous, correct, you know, animals. Those you're obviously taking more of a precaution just because you know. But do you have anything where you're just like, dude, I do not want to be here right now?
Well, you know, the funny part is sometimes I have a little bit more about things that really I shouldn't be about. It's like you know, I tell people real simple. I'm pulling a big clutch of eggs. There's this 20-foot python striking at me. And they're going...
Which your videos are great on
yeah.
every single
yeah, I mean, they go viral constantly, yeah. you know? And the snake's like 2 inches away from my face. And people are like, oh, my God, you got more guts than any person I ever met. And I look at them, and they got a motorcycle helmet in their hand. And I go, I can't count my dead friends from motorcycles. You know? I'm like, you get in a motorcycle accident, you got a 50% chance of dying on the highway. You know what I mean? I get bit by this snake, there's no way I'm going to die.
You're like, it's just going to hurt for a little bit.
It's going to hurt. Maybe I even have to get my skin sewed up, you know? But I got something to sew up, brother. You know what I mean? And so it's, you know, fear is false evidence appearing real.
Real, yep.
And you know what? 90% of our fears hold us back from the exact thing we're supposed to be doing. And so I think that sometimes the things in our life that we fear, we need to go learn about. Because usually fear is from lack of knowledge. And so... Am I saying you should pick up a rattlesnake? Heck no. But I'm saying you should know what a rattlesnake is.
Yeah.
And know what all, you know, and just so that you know not to do something with it. You know what I mean? Not to go run out and freak out and run away and get bit by something else or fall off the side of the cliff or, you know, end up in a cactus tree hung up or whatever.
Cactuses suck. I've hit cactuses.
Life is full of cactuses.
Oh, man. Dude, cactus is still like one of the most brutal things I've hit. Like those hurt so bad.
Just the little pricklies all over. Those are the best.
Man,
huh?
I'll get like, I've done it out moto riding or mountain bike riding. You'll accidentally clip one in a corner and dude, they are the worst to get out of you. Like
spend just, the next hour trying to pull stuff out of you.
Gosh, and they get stuck in there. But I will say like, I'm not the biggest fan of reptiles. I think they're cool looking.
You don't have to be
a fan. But as far as like handling, like I love looking at them. Like your alligators and stuff, I think they're so cool. I like them when they're in a glass. I like all that
and
stuff.
And you know what?
But
that's smart.
I will
say. Nothing wrong
with
that.
And make sure you don't ever work here then because Jay will definitely open one of those doors and tell you to go change a light bulb next to him.
I will say though, we were here, what, 2 or 3 weeks ago, and your daughter put like the big blue.
The black one, the rainbow one.
Yeah. The most famous snake on the planet.
Dude, it was cool though. Like, yeah, I actually.
Just a
like,
gentle giant.
Yeah, I actually got to hold it, and like, it was a totally different feeling. But there's like that fear in my head that like, I'm going to put it on, it's just going to start constricting around
right.
me.
Right. Which like, is like I say, you know, it's yeah. like, and you know what? This goes to people that ride, that are scared of motorcycles. I'm not scared of motorcycles, but you know what? I'm probably not going to get on a motorcycle. Unless there's something to justify it. I jumped out of a perfectly good airplane because I was scared of it, okay? I wanted to find out. Hey,
skydiving's awesome.
Yeah, you know, and I didn't particularly find it to be the most exhilarating thing in the world only because I don't understand why I want to do it. And but I did it because I wanted to get the fear out of me and just because I thought, you know what? I always tell people to face their fears. Why are you so scared of a plane? Why are you so scared of jumping out? So I did... You know, a tandem jump, because that's all you can do. And they spun me. If I ever jump again, it'll never be spinning. I just like, hey, I'm going to at least enjoy the moment.
Yeah.
When we stopped spinning, I was like, this is kind of cool. You know what I mean? And so I could see how you could enjoy it. But my whole point is that now I really, you know, when they were getting ready to push me out, they're like, you know, basically.
It's a weird feeling.
No,
right
they,
before you go.
And they were like, are you scared? And I'm like, no. And they go, you're full of crap. And I wasn't at all scared because before I jumped, I asked, tell me the things that kill jumpers. And I'm like, I ain't gonna do that. You know what I mean? When I go on the big lion and tiger, I'm scared because I don't understand lions and tigers. I asked the guy that's the professional, tell me what not to do. Yeah. You know what I mean?
What's going to make me not get eaten right now?
I will say
right.
that, like,
yeah. Like, what do you not do? And he's like, oh, well, don't jump around. Don't show fear. I'm like, okay, so basic animal stuff. You know, fear is, like, not a good thing in your life. I always tell people.
Well, animals will sense it.
Oh, people sense it.
Yeah.
I mean, I always say, if you're in the middle of downtown L.A., two guys show up, some type of gang people, let's just say, right? And you know what their intent is. And if they walk up to you and you kind of like put your head down and start looking the other direction, you might as well say, I'm bait.
Yeah.
Where if you say, hey, what's going on? They're going to be like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
These guys,
like, this guy's alert.
This is the wrong person we want to talk to. He's got a gun or he's, yeah. you know, something's wrong. Yeah. We're not going to, you know. And so just like an animal, the snakes, they strike it when they strike when there's fear or they feel threatened. It's mostly what they're striking at. So if you don't threaten and they think maybe they don't have to be threatened. And so a lot of times I can pick up a snake that will bite everybody and they'll be like, why didn't it bite you? You snake whispered. I go, no, snake has no scent. I'm not throwing any vibe to be dangerous.
Yeah.
And so if I'm not scared, then the snake doesn't understand why it doesn't need to be scared. Now we're both fine. Same way with people. One person comes in grumpy, everybody's
Jay
grumpy.
And the snakes also on the honor system.
Sometimes they break it.
Yeah. Sometimes they don't appreciate the honor system, though.
Right.
You know, and I know you're busy, and we'll wrap this up here pretty quick. But I mean, I have millions of questions for you. I could go all
shoot
hours.
With a question. Yeah. I'll answer quicker.
Yeah, yeah. But are you self-taught in everything that you learned with reptiles, or have you taken classes, or like, because you're very knowledgeable
about
this.
You get bit enough, Matt, you learn pretty good.
So here you go, guys. I was I don't even want to say what they called us back then, but I was in special ed. I was, went to school. I think 1 year I missed 83 days of school. I was, my mom had passed away when I was 4. I completely hated school. I hated it probably because I just had so many learning disabilities, and they have a mold for you. And trying to put you in a mold that you don't fit doesn't work so well. And nobody likes to be the last pick on the football team, the lowest grade in the class. Nobody wants to be that. And so it's really frustrating. I was all that. And basically, I just didn't go to school. And eventually, the way I got into snakes was literally escape. So I'd go out all my neighbors they were poor too, but they were rich compared to me. They had bicycles and, you know.
They had all the toys.
They had toys. And, you know, Christmas morning, I'd wake up and sit on doorsteps wanting to get in, and they were, you know, it was family time, and they were opening gifts till 11 in the morning, and like, you know, and I'd just go walk out in the field and flip boards. And at about the age of 14, I decided, well, the age when my dad drank himself to death, about 3 months later, I became a Christian. I started believing in God, and I always believed in God, but I didn't really think he was a good guy. I didn't understand how I got cheated. And I became a real Christian. I say that real is when I, you know, came to the realization, like, I had a kind of a weird, heavy-duty experience.
Did you grow up around here?
Yeah.
So were you, like, Pastor Chuck Smith ever?
Yeah, it was actually at a Calvary Chapel. Yeah. It was at a camp. And the pastor stood up there and said, some of you guys came here because of, you know, your parents made you. And they went through this list, and some of you here just because a girl asked you to come. And I literally was only there because 5 girls asked if I was coming, you know.
That's why you always did church camp.
And it was so funny because it was like, honestly, I don't remember anything he said except those two words. And from that point on, for at least 2 years, I was in a cloud of knowing, feeling, being positive God was there next to me. And so I decided then I was going to try to catch up in school, which was impossible. And at the age of 15, I started my own business. I built a boat at 14. Which sounds crazy.
Wait, I have to jump in too, because my dad actually makes a joke about this story where he's like, Jay will cut a 2x4, and then he sets it on the ground, and he built a boat around that 2x4.
Yeah, whatever.
And he's like, the weirdest part is it totally worked.
Well, that's funny because contractors work with me, and they go, that won't work. And one of my friends that is like the ultimate contractor pulls him aside and says, you want to look dumb? Keep arguing with him. Because he's paying the bills, and it's going to work out. I hate being wrong, and I don't know how he's always right, but it always works out. And it's kind of weird. It's not that I'm so smart. I just had nothing and learned to work with ways to make. I always try to shortcut.
Yeah.
So basically what ended up happening was at 15, I'd already started my business making money. My counselor calls me, kept asking me every day, like, because I did so bad at school.
Yeah.
She would be like, you know, wow, this kid doesn't have a chance. You know what I mean? And I do so bad, you're going to have to slip it on a little farther. Yeah.
We're having technical difficulties.
Oh, no. And she kept asking me, like, well, what are you doing this weekend? I'm like, oh, I'm going to, last weekend I made 500. This weekend I'm going to try to make 1,000. And she thought I was lying, you know? And I was making like $1,000 a weekend sometimes. And so all of a sudden, it's Christmas vacation. I'm 16. And she says, hey, what do you think about me visiting you at work? Because she's thinking that I'm going to freak out, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, awesome. I'm going to work. I said, my plan is to work the 2 weeks and save $10,000. She looks at me like, you little punk.
It's at 15.
Yeah. She's like, you little punk. You know what I mean? She didn't say it, but she looked at me with this look like, I'm calling bullcrap.
She's like, no way.
Yeah. What do you think about me visiting you? I go, awesome. She goes, what day's best? I'll be there every day. I'm going to work every day. So I'm sitting there in Uncle Louie,
yep,
which is the person that I ended up moving in with, is why I didn't end up in a foster care, because he wasn't my uncle, but everybody called him Uncle Louie. And so the police basically came to visit me after my dad passed away and in the middle of the night and said, your dad's dead and, you know, I'm going to leave you here with Uncle Louie. And I was like, whatever. You know, I mean, I didn't even care. I mean, I was so mad at my dad for drinking himself to death, and I'd been fighting with him for months over it. But anyway, so basically the counselor comes in, and Uncle Louie's weighing my fish, and I fished this local spot, and I had these massive fish. And, I mean, I even made the front cover of National Geographic.
Somebody, are you catching tuna? Crazy stuff. Catching?
They were these thing called cow cod.
Okay.
And so I put this, so that she walks up, and there's this line that's Christmas Day. Don't ask me why she came on Christmas Day.
Yeah, of all the days you pick, that's the one that you choose?
She just walks up on Christmas Day, and I got this line of like 40 people waiting to buy my fish. And she walks up like shocked that I'm standing where I'm supposed to be, you know? Like, this is yours? And just then, Uncle Louie's got one arm, right? And he's struggling to get this big fish in a scale, and I'm reaching over, and fish goes in a scale, and she's looking, and he says, $63 or $68. And she looks at this pile of fish, just dumbfounded, looks at me and goes, and says, the second you're back in school, I want you to visit. You come to my office. And I'm like, okay. But she was like, kind of like, ugh, you know?
Yeah.
And so, first day of school, after walk in, I'm supposed to go see my counselor. Okay, great. They check me in. I go in her room. She shuts the door behind us. I'm thinking, what's going on? She looks at me and says, what I'm going to tell you right now, if you tell anybody, I'm going to tell them you're a little liar. I'm like, what the heck am I doing?
What just happened?
Yeah, you're like, what's going on here?
I'm like, really have no idea what's going on. She goes, you got to get out of school now. And I go, what? She goes, you're never going to become anything here. You're already making more money than I am.
I was going to say, I thought she was going to be like the movie quote in Wolf of Wall Street, where she's like, you show me that kind of money, I'll quit my job right now. I'll come work for you.
She literally just told me, she goes, you found a niche. You're good at it. You're making more money than probably our principal.
She's like, you're wasting time here. Right. You might as well go put all your time in making money.
She just goes, you just need to go do it. And I look at her and I go, I don't want to go to jail. You know what I mean? Because I'm scared of truding officers, you know? Yeah. I just want to do the right thing at this point. And she says, I'll take care of it. And so she basically says, do you have anybody that'll sign papers for you? I go, well, I don't have any legal guardians. Okay, well, who do you live with? And I go, guy named Uncle Louie. Perfect. Will he sign this paper to get you out of school? I think so. And he goes, okay, so here's this form, night school. Sign up for it. I'll take care of the rest. So I wasn't bright enough then, but now I look back and I know what she did. She signed me out with the night school information and then threw away both things. So I was legally out, but not legally in the new system. So she erased me from the system. Off I went, made a lot of money. I did well. I didn't work consistently, but I always maintained a $10,000 plus bank account when I was 15, and then when I, you know.
That's not bad for 15, yeah, that's I'd not say. Bad for 15. That's decent, that's huh?
Not bad for 34. Let me tell you a little secret. That 10,000 is 100,000 now. Yeah. So it was crazy. So there you go. I wish I had a degree. I tell everybody, if you're good in school and you have a dream, take double down on everything you might need for it. Go to school, I wish I can't even imagine where I could have been. I went to school, but I'm so happy that I got started doing something I love. The fishing business went weird because when I got married, I didn't want to be a fisherman.
Yeah.
Because everybody drank and everybody, and I was like trying to, I wanted my kids to have something different than I had, which was almost a burden for me, but I didn't want them to end up
the way I did. So as far as just, we'll make it real quick. As far as like species and everything goes here, because your knowledge is awesome. You know, when you're doing your videos, you're talking about how like the eggs come out, you know, different live birth versus egg birth, which I didn't know snakes had live births.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that.
I had no idea about that. A lot of people don't know that.
I think it's like a 60 or 70% eggs. The rest are live.
So as far as that goes, is this just all kind of self-taught as you're getting new animals? Do you read about
same
stuff?
No, I don't read anything hardly. Okay.
I can't really read, remember? No, I'm just kidding.
You know, it's funny is like...
He said it earlier, you know.
Hey, reality of it is, I can read. The reality of it is, reading for me is like a desk jockey trying to play soccer. You know what I mean? It's just like, this is a nightmare.
Yeah.
You know, but yet you go to him, pay him $400 an hour because he's a attorney. You know what I mean? Or you I mean, we're all cut different. We have to find what we're good at. And we got to go chase that.
You're good at what you do now, which we're running our long here, but one more question is the way that you're breeding, you know, snakes and stuff now too, you're coming up with different species that
What it is morphs.
Okay.
So it's like, we take basically weird ones that come out of the wild that are all different colors. We made about 400 first time ever seen on the planet Earth colorations of reticulated pythons.
Right, so you're...
That's what we're known for.
I don't want to call you a mad scientist, but in
what do you mean?
But in a way, you kind of are a mad scientist of snakes.
I've learned that snakes can have babies without dads. I mean, I've learned genetics, that genetic engineers have to go to school for a long time. I've learned it all firsthand.
I love it.
Like, it's insane. I mean... I know who the mom and the dad is. I know who the dad is by the babies and the genes that they express. And, you know, I mean, so we can use three dads and know who the dad is and everything. And, like, right down to that there is no dad, which is insane.
That's wild. You know? That's wild.
So there's a lot of crazy stuff. And you know what? When you do something that you're passionate about, the knowledge sticks to you because you want it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the guy that's playing a video game. He can tell you, you know, He'd be playing a video game, and some of these guys make more money than
oh, yeah, the streamers. They're making big
stupid
bucks.
Stupid money.
Yeah.
And it's a video game, right? Yeah. But you know what they're doing? Best to ever do it. You know what I mean? And so it doesn't really matter what you're doing. You just got to be, you just do what you love, and it won't ever be work. And I can tell you, I'm 57 years old. I may have started with good looking and nice. And good. I know it's hard to believe I started out good looking, but I did. And the whole thing's been a struggle, but I can tell you, I've done things that I don't care how rich I was, I couldn't do.
Yeah.
I've helicopters over crocodiles and taken all over the world by billionaires and from an orphan. And the only thing I stayed true to was doing things that I believed in and I loved.
I love it, man.
I love it, yeah.
Dude, it's an awesome story. And like I said, you know, you have some stuff to get to.
I got a book coming.
Do you?
I got to finish writing it. It has a lot of these stories, the real stories and the details.
When are you hoping to release this?
I thought I'd have it by now, but that being said, I think having 30 million followers now is probably better than rushing it and releasing it when I wanted it released. So, but I hope I'm working on it. It's pretty much written.
Okay.
I just want to make it.
You want to fine tune it.
I want to basically make it where people can read it and relate and use it for their own. You know, once a smart pastor said real simple, he said, you can learn from your mistakes or you can learn from other people's mistakes. And you know what? It takes a long time to learn from your mistakes. That's why I got gray hair. You know, so if I can help somebody else get out of their mistakes quicker from learning from my mistakes, I would like it to be a book like that.
That's awesome. And I mean, that's a lot about what this show's about, like for people to tune in and like hear people's stories, hear where they messed up. You know, hopefully it motivates them. Whether they're starting their business or maybe they're failing at a bit, whatever it's at life, they can get motivated from this and learn from everything that we've done wrong or guests
have
done wrong.
I've had a lot of employees in my life, right? And I can't tell you how rewarding it is to have one come back after 5 years and tell me, you know, you changed my life because the way you taught me to think has gotten me to where I am today. I mean, I had it just a few weeks ago. An employee called me almost crying, telling me, I just had to call you because I had the worst week of my life and I could have never made it. But you remember this, you know? And I told him, you do what you can and let the rest work out, you know? And he said, I applied it and I literally saved my whole business in 1 week by doing what you showed me to do. And I was just like, that's awesome. I mean, how, I don't care how much money somebody makes. How can you beat it when people come in and telling you you changed their life? And it's not me changing their life. It's just me sharing what changed my life.
I love it. And, you know, maybe as this book's about to get released, we can sit down and do another episode and kind of do a press release on the book.
It'd be fun.
I'd love to do some more stuff with you. But overall, Jay, it has been an absolute honor and a pleasure. Your stories are awesome, motivating. Thank you for sitting down. If you want to find Jay, it's at Jay Prehistoric, right?
Just, yeah, pretty much.
And then Prehistoric Pets.
Yeah, Snapchat, Instagram.
Yeah, you can find him on every social media platform, on everything.
So search for at Jay Prehistoric, at Prehistoric Pets, and Prehistoric Zoo is
the Reptile Zoo.
The Reptile Zoo.
My daughter named it the Reptile Zoo. I know it's simple, but she made a custom font and everything, and it came out really good.
I think it's working out just fine for you guys.
I think we're going to be perfect.
But, buddy, thank you so much.
Thank
this has
you.
Been an honor, and I can't wait to kind of go out there, check out some animals with you, and we'll talk soon.
Sounds awesome.
We'll
I really appreciate
we'll go scare
you guys
him
coming.
With a big snake again, too.
We'll definitely do this again.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks,
thank you, Jay.
Jay.
We'll see you guys next week. Thank
pleasure
you.
Pleasure having you.
Have a good one.